Mr. Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We have got a whole full house today. Two in-studio guests. Keith Hernandez is making his way here as the Mets are here taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. And they won their fifth in a row last night. So we're good luck for Francisco Lindor, who called into yesterday's program. Keith Hernandez in studio. And Mike Del Tufo is already leading our poll question of who is going to be most likely the second spitter on the Rich Eisen Show set today. That would be DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts.
Was it Roger McDowell?
It was, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
It was Roger McDowell. And TJ Jefferson is all dressed for.
Look at you.
He's, my God, he's like, let's sound the trumpets the way you're dressed right here. On. He's got the Mets jersey, the
is that
Mets
David
hat.
Wright? David
is that
Wright
David
jersey?
Wright? Is that a Met David Wright game? I don't know why. Turn on your microphone if you're going to talk.
I'm
on the
sorry.
Rich
no,
show.
I was just. We were saying stuff
fronting?
Earlier that not.
He's too busy fronting?
I wouldn't call this fronting.
All right, there we go. That is a David Wright gamer, isn't it? Or is that the five? I don't know. I can't see if there's another number than the five. Is that a Sid Fernandez gamer?
Hey, El Cid.
El Cid.
El Cid gamer?
Nah, this is David Wright. This is the captain.
Because we're going to go down memory lane with him, with Keith Hernandez.
Yeah.
And then Tom Pelphrey, who I've been a fan of for quite some time. He plays the long-lost brother, both figuratively and literally, on Ozark. He's in the new HBO program, the original series Love and Death, with Elizabeth Olsen and Jesse Plemons. Was he RB2 back in the day? Was Jesse Plemons?
Jesse Plemons.
Which one was he?
He was
Friday
ended
Night
up
Lights?
Being the place kicker, oh, remember?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Kristen Ritter as well. He will be in studio hour number three. Mike Florio first up, as we'll talk a little bit of NFL draft 9 days away.
Whew.
Off-season workout programs are up and running. Huge news out of Western New York. The Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott. Saying today, DeMar Hamlin has been medically cleared to return. Though Brandon Bean said it, pardon me, the general manager of the Bills said that DeMar Hamlin's been cleared to resume full football activity, and we'll discuss that a few minutes for sure on this program.
We got into a nice little discussion about that earlier.
Yeah, and so we'll chop that one up.
Pre-show, we were on fire.
Along with you, 844-204-RICH being the number to dial here on the program. It's been a while here on the Rich Eisen Show that we started the show by talking about Draymond Green's activities in the playoffs. But let me zig a little bit while everyone else is zagging on that front. And obviously, we will discuss what happened with Draymond Green and Domantas Sabonis last night. But you got to give it up first because it's going to be totally lost in the Draymond stomp and flagrant fouls and ejections and should he be suspended conversation. It's going to be lost just how freaking good the Sacramento Kings team is.
Yeah.
And because, you know, light the beam to start this program. Honestly, we're all focused on the one seeds and obviously Durant and with the Suns and the Celtics and the Sixers. Will that be a de facto Eastern Conference championship final? Should that matchup happen in the Eastern Conference semifinal and the Lakers up 1-0 and what's going on with Morant and Giannis and the rest of last night's headlines? And sure, the Sacramento Kings haven't done what we were seeing them do, which is make the playoffs and win a playoff game in 17 years. And we don't talk about sleepy Sacramento. It's not even on your pop culture chart, pretty much. 8 is enough. Might have been the last show set in Sacramento, California. but this team, you tell me, guys, and I know I have 2/3 of the Rich Eisen Show basketball podcast right here on this set with Adam Chudwin. You want to chime in at 844-204-RICH. Adam's back there answering calls today for us. You tell me, who has a more lethal first step to the basket? Who's quicker to the basket with an equally lethal outside shot than De'Aaron Fox in the NBA? Hmm. Talk to me.
First thing that comes to mind is Ja Morant with the first step, getting to the rim.
Yep.
We've seen his explosive highlight reel dunks all season long in his career also. Not a good jumper as De'Aaron Fox, I don't think.
Trae Young, he's fast and he can shoot. But
Trae Young's not explosive at the rim like Fox and
De'Aaron Fox.
Morant, yeah.
Has got it all.
Yeah, he's
you good luck guarding him. I think that's part of the reason why Jordan Poole is nailed to the bench in this series. Who's going to, I mean, if you can't guard this guy, if you can't play defense, if you have trouble playing defense, if you can't handle the pick and roll, if you can't.
In trouble.
And with Sabonis being the pick.
He's look tucked away in Sacramento. A lot of people don't know this kid, man.
Look out. This is what you need in the playoffs in so many different ways as scorers. And when things are tough, you need an offensive set to work. Then you dish. Malik Monk, holy cow. Lakers fans are like, where was that guy when he was right here?
Like, he was a different person this season than
Harrison Barnes. It was ironic. He was the one who, or is it coincidental? I don't know. Who had the ball at the very end last night, former Warrior.
Yeah. You could tell some of those dunks, you could tell, were personal.
He's the veteran presence, too, and Sabonis. Can he guard the perimeter or what? He's all over the place. And he can pound you down low. And, you know, Kevin Huerter, he's got a nice outside shot. Davion Mitchell was the one who kind of put in the dagger last night from the corner.
And we know how you feel about Huerter. That's your guy.
Uh-huh. Hey, everyone thought, oh, sure, you want to be the beware of playing in, because if you play in, you might not make it. And then you get the Memphis Grizzlies. And you don't want to be that 5-seed Clippers fans. Oh, you don't want a piece of the Suns, even though they won game one. But that was the conversation. You wanted to be the 6-seed because you want to take on the Kings. Okay. Okay.
That's the wrong move.
Okay. Up 2-0 in the series. And the last time the Warriors were down 0-2 in a playoff series, it was when all the smoke was happening. Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson and Baron Davis.
B. Diddy.
For Don Nelson's 2006-07 Warriors. That was the last time. So prior, this is the first time Steph Curry's been down 0-2 in a series. And the Warriors in danger of getting bounced and without even winning a game on the road. Got to give it up to Mike Brown, the way he's dialing things up for the Sacramento Kings and De'Aaron Fox. Holy cow.
He's something else.
Honestly, you blink, he's at the rim. And if you try and defend that, he's spotting up for threes. Hit nothing but net. We'll see what they do on the road, though. But I wanted to start the show with that. Don't lose that in this shuffle.
You're a positive guy, Rich.
Well, but I also want to make sure, because I know the way the media works, we're all going to be focused on Draymond. We'll get to that. But that just covers up the Kings after Draymond went out, taking a punch or a stomp and surviving it and making the shots to win it. And making sure that Curry is hectored enough that he doesn't have an open look for a three. Clay had an open look for a three, buries it. I mean, that's what you need to do to beat the Warriors. You got to make sure that they're somehow off balance, that they're guarded around the perimeter.
Just got to make them work.
And the problem is, and that's the problem with the Draymond going out, is if you guard the perimeter, who's going to be the one making those passes from the perimeter of backdoor cuts? Normally that can be Curry. That's Draymond's role. And he wasn't there. Let's get to that. Draymond Green, as you know, I think is going to the Hall of Fame. And I don't believe the Warriors have as many rings as they like to tell you about, because they have them, without Draymond Green. They might have none of them. But as Brockman has pointed out many times on this show, and I'm sure would be happy to do so again, they could have more if it wasn't for Draymond Green's non-basketball activities during a basketball game. And I remember, were we on the air yet when LeBron and I think we were on the air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were on the air because it's been going on a while. When Draymond hit King James in the crown jewels and got suspended, the Cavs gladly took that as an opportunity to win the final three games of their finals. And I just remember Draymond Green, when he suspended, you know where he was? Remember where he was?
He was
across the street. Watching at an A's game with Marshawn Lynch. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I guess he's not sitting there thinking, I'm not available for my team in such a crucial situation. As a matter of fact, he's owning it. He's wearing it on his sleeve. He's wearing it on his sleeve and owning it in a way that I thought was unhealthy. And now that he's got more gray in his beard, one would think that being unavailable would be worn in a much more statesmanlike manner. Not last night. Domantas Sabonis and him are tangled up, which is one way to say it. Another way to say it, the way that I saw it, the way that Jim Jackson saw it, the way that many others saw it. Sabonis grabs Draymond Green's ankle after the Warriors gain possession. And after Sabonis is not called for throwing Klay Thompson out of the way and onto the ground. And by the way, the momentum of doing that is what put him on the ground. And it sure looks like to me he's grabbing onto Draymond's ankle and Draymond responds by stomping on him. Flagrant two, he's ejected. Sabonis gets a flagrant foul. By the way, missed his two free throws. But they do get but they do get possession.
Well, that's because his lung had collapsed.
Oh, is that right? Because the lung had collapsed to the point where he was playing lights out perimeter defense for the rest of the game. But that's, you know, he's going to still have an MRI today. We'll leave that aside for the moment. Honestly, I mean, he was running around. By the way, if he does have cracked ribs or something or bruised or whatever, man, the way that his lateral movement was protecting the perimeter in the final minutes of that game.
You know how adrenaline works.
Fighting through Kevon Looney's picks.
Looney.
Man, that was impressive. But this was a one possession game. And Draymond gets ejected and he's barking at the crowd and then seemingly happy with the news. At least before I go, at least tell me you're calling it fair enough where Sabonis also got a flagrant. And then once he seemed satisfied with that news and he delivered that, had that news delivered to him, he's off the court. And your best ability in sports is your availability, and he's not there. And I would, you know, when you see the rest of the young guys on the bench clapping it up and seemingly, you know, fired up by Draymond's activities, and, you know, what are you going to do it for Draymond? Do it for the stomp? Now, Klay Thompson did say, you know, I don't agree, you know, let me get this exact words down. Klay Thompson did say afterwards that, what are you going to do when someone grabs your foot when you're running full speed? I don't know how he was running full speed. It did seem like he was just starting from scratch. I'm not saying what Draymond did was right, but you just can't grab somebody's foot taking off at a full sprint. Steve Kerr said he didn't see it. Steph Curry didn't address it. I will. You can't get thrown out of a playoff game. You just simply can't get thrown out of a playoff game on the road when you're staring an 0-2 hole in the face. And Kevon Looney taking over Draymond's role in this offense and certainly on defense, totally different team. And despite the rest of the Warriors standing there and clapping it up and seemingly fired up, I would have loved to have had a stenographer giving me the inner monologue inside Steph Curry's head. It seemed like, you know what, it's difficult to ascribe it, but I would just have to think that the future Hall of Fame athlete in Steph's head was like, really? We're doing this again? Again. And it seems like to me that he looked deflated by it. Now, he played his ass off. I'm going to talk about tough to guard. Right.
How do you guard this guy?
You don't. You're getting your steps. Let's put it that way. Nice. You get your steps in. Nice. Look at your Apple Watch at the end of the day. Like, I've traveled 1,000 miles today. What? What? Draymond after the game, he didn't own it. That's what he had to say.
Walk us through what happened there.
My leg got grabbed. Second time in two nights. Referees just watch it. I got to land my foot somewhere. And I'm not the most flexible person, so it's not stretching that far.
So you didn't really see where you were stepping? You just kind of...
I can only step so far and pulling my leg away. So it is what it is.
What was the explanation they gave? I know they gave him a technical, then obviously you
too. The explanation was I stumped too hard.
How hard was that impact? Were you surprised that he was on the ground for that long?
No, I wasn't surprised that he stayed down that long.
You said two times you've been held with Sabonis both times?
No, it was Monk last game, right on the baseline under the rim. So either you're going to stop it. John Goble was looking at Monk hold my leg the last game, and he just let it go. And Zach clearly was watching my leg get held this game and let it go. So I guess ankle grabbing is okay.
It's not okay, but, you know, and he had just escaped a reputational foul getting called on him just moments before after a play where the officials in full real time thought that he threw his behind out to trip up Sabonis up the floor. And Kerr challenged that and they reversed it. So he'd already had a reputational foul. You knew the refs were just looking at this sort of stuff or for it. And then maybe not on Sabonis, but maybe I would just say, you know what? You don't have to run up the court when your ankle is being grabbed. Why don't you just fall right down? Why don't you just call attention to it by flopping all over the place? And you lay on the floor for 3 minutes. That might not be his MO. His MO is like, screw you, it's not being called on me. I'll just place my foot down. It just happens to be on the chest of my opponent. It just seems to me that, you know, he'd prefer playing the victim this way than in the moment of being fouled. And part of that might be, it just seems, again, and he has said this before, like, hey, I'm going to be this way, and I do this to fire my team up, and if they don't follow me, then, you know, we're not winning anyway. I kind of am paraphrasing what he has actually said. I'm just wondering if that hit of Jordan Poole earlier this year is just something he just wants to keep doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on. I'm just wondering. Because why would he just be so happy to be unavailable with 7 minutes to go in the cauldron of the beam lighting in Sacramento? Why would you clap for being ejected? You got to be out there. You're a Hall of Fame player. Why is this, in your mind, better for you? I mean, better for your podcast downloads, better for us to talk about it. I don't get it. It's just mind-blowing to me. What was he thinking when he's watching his team having trouble getting shots off on the perimeter? What's he thinking? Sitting in the locker room as he's watching it go down the tubes. What's he thinking? I have been wronged by the officiating. Really?
Yeah, he's always the victim.
But
it's always his fault. There's no accountability. He's the guy, like you said, knocked out Jordan Poole and then made a documentary so we would feel bad for him.
So what's the numbers, though, the hard, cold numbers about being down 0-2?
When you're down 0-2 in the NBA playoffs, you lose 92% of the time.
Well, I mean, that's what you need to be thinking about when Sabonis is grabbing your ankle.
They had chances to win both games.
And I know the way he plays is the way he plays, and that's part of the reason why he's going to the Hall of Fame, because it motivates him, and I understand that's what athletes need to do, but he wasn't there. Wasn't there. Gone. Man, I would love to know what Steph Curry's thinking about that. Because how Steph thinks about it, I think, has a long way to go about what Draymond's future is there, as well as, by the way the West of this series goes. I mean, the Warriors could easily win the next two. Easily. And then you got a best of three, and they're going to have to extend their winning streak of winning one game on the road to 28 consecutive series in order to get out of here. But Draymond wasn't there. That's it. End of story. And that shouldn't happen. It can't happen. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Happy to take your phone calls on this. 9 days to the draft. Are the Texans really not going to take a quarterback? Are they really going to trade out? Why not CJ Stroud? There's a rumor going around as to why the Texans wouldn't take C.J. Stroud, and it has nothing to do with C.J. Stroud at all, other than his choice of agent. Hmm. I want to hit that with Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, and the Jalen Hurts contract has a one big fat stone thrown into the quarterback contract pond, and we'll discuss the ripple effects of that and what's going on in the rest of the draft world. Mike Florio when we come back. Noble is a training brand for people who work hard and don't believe in excuses. Noble's performance footwear, apparel, and accessories are worn by some of the fittest athletes on earth and is now the official combine training partner of the NFL and the official on-field supplier of apparel and headwear for the NFL Scouting Combine. Head to www.nobleproject.com/NFL to see how Noble forever changed the NFL Combine and to shop football training essentials and more gear for your day-to-day workouts. Stay tuned to the Rich Eisen Show and keep your eyes on our Twitter feed and YouTube channel as I'm hosting a new segment sponsored by Noble called From the Combine to the Draft. I'll profile a few players' journeys from the physical and mental tests of the NFL Combine as we head towards the thrilling moment when the picks are announced in Kansas City during the draft. That's twitter.com/RichEisenShow and youtube.com/RichEisenShow. From the Combine to the Draft, sponsored by Noble. Men, do you get distracted during the day thinking about your underarms sweating, itching, or emitting an odor? Do those thoughts keep you from showing care when it counts? New and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant with 72-hour sweat and odor protection and 1/4 moisturizing cream helps you forget about your underarms so you can be present for the moments that matter. Don't let underarm insecurities keep you at arm's distance from the ones you care about. Buy new and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant wherever personal care products are sold. We're having Mike Florian on to talk about everything going on in the NFL and obviously the draft 9 days away, but it just hit me with Keith Hernandez in studio in hour number two. This is one of the great Seinfeld referencers that there is on in sports media. Joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show prior to Keith Hernandez in studio is Mike Florio. How are you, Mike?
Rich, I'm doing great, and I've done a little research for you.
Yes.
Keith Hernandez said back in 2015 that he still makes roughly $3,000 per year.
There you go.
For his Seinfeld expenses.
Yeah, I do not make that from my CSI.
That's so shocking.
That means he got paid more than scale.
So Seinfeld hooked him up.
Yeah. I mean, he also helped him move, right? That makes sense. One of the greatest episodes, right? Those two episodes.
But he only didn't help him move. Remember, he begged off. He decided that was taking the relationship too far, so it was Kramer and Newman who yes. swooped in after they decided they no longer hate Keith Hernandez,
that's
even
right.
though he spat on Kramer, although it wasn't him, it was Roger McDowell. They went and helped him move.
I knew you would keep us down the straight and narrow on that.
Yeah, you got to be accurate.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, let's just jump in here. What's going on with the Texans? Why did the first thing out of Nick Caserio's mouth yesterday start with he's not leaving? He even made a Wolf of Wall Street reference. What was that all about yesterday?
Well, there were some rumors that surfaced last week that he's leaving after the draft. And, you know, over the years, that comes up from time to time in connection with a given GM. And my experience has been that more often than not, when those rumors start circulating, there's something there. I remember it happening with Mike Maccagnan, the Jets GM, a few years ago, and I remember poking around before the draft with people who would presumably be in a position to know, and it was like, no, everything's fine, he's not leaving, and then boom, he's gone. It happened with John Dorsey with the Chiefs right after he drafted Patrick Mahomes. Now, Andy Reid runs the show there, but still, GM fired right after the draft. So when I hear something like that, I pay attention. So John McClain, who has covered that franchise forever. He raised it and knocked it down. Mike Silver of the San Francisco Chronicle, formerly of NFL Network, he said that the talk is Adam Peters, the 49ers GM, would be in play to replace Caserio if he left. And so he had to say something. He felt compelled to say something. But when you look at what he said, Rich, he made it clear it's his perspective. The circle isn't complete until ownership says he's not going anywhere. It's one thing for him to not be leaving, but if ownership has decided to make a change after the draft, and until Cal McNair comes out with a statement or a quote or something that says this is all phony and exaggerated and fake, then I think we still have to pay attention to the possibility that a change is going to be made after the draft. It's exactly what they did 17 years ago when Bob McNair, the late founder of the team, Cal's father, fired Dom Capers, the head coach, right after the season, and then after the draft, Charlie Casserly, the GM, technically resigned, but the thinking was he got pushed. So I don't think it's over yet. All we know is Caserio, from his perspective, isn't walking away.
Does this have anything to do also with the notion that Caserio also did nothing to squelch on Monday, that they, the Texans, second overall, might not take a quarterback? I mean, what's up with that?
Well, you know, we had assumed for a while, and really once the Panthers slipped into the number one overall spot March 10, we assumed they were going to take C.J. Stroud. The betting markets rocketed in the direction of Stroud, so it would leave Bryce Young for the Texans, and we thought that's how it was going to go, Stroud, Young. Well, as time went by, it's become more and more clear it's going to be Young to the Panthers, so what do the Texans do? And now lately this idea has emerged that they may not go quarterback. And, you know, Rich, the flicker first came for me when D'Amico Ryan, the coach of the team, was speaking a week or so ago, and he talked about how it's important for whoever the number two overall pick is, whoever it may be, to not feel like they have to be the savior of the team. And for a defensive player, if they go edge rusher, it's harder to justify that status. You expect stats from someone like that. You know, with a quarterback, it's easy. You go out and you light it up for 4,000 yards. You justify that pick. It's almost the same situation as when they took Mario Williams, number one overall. Like, how many sacks do you need to get people to say, yeah, that was a good decision? And I think that D'Amico Ryan's putting that idea out there, I think in hindsight, is a clue that they're thinking about not going quarterback second overall. And look at where Ryan's just came from. Third overall 2 years ago in San Francisco, Trey Lance. How's that worked out after they traded up to get him? Last year, final pick in the draft, Brock Purdy. How's that worked out? So I think Ryan's is bringing some perspective to this process that may push them away from quarterback at number two.
And then, of course, when there's a rumor that confuses people, that's where conspiracy concepts start to fill a void. And again, a team like the Texans choosing second overall and having the pick of the entire quarterback class, save whoever is chosen by Carolina, just is so confusing of a notion. Even though Will Anderson is really talented, and we're assuming that's who the first player off the board could be, this one long windup for the pitch to ask you about the conspiracy theory that the Texans won't take Stroud. They will definitely not take a quarterback second overall, certainly if Stroud is that choice, because he shares the same agent as Deshaun Watson. Is that possible?
Oh, I think it's definitely possible. Look, there have been relationships between agents and teams that have become ruined in both directions. There'll be an agent that doesn't want to deal with a given team, a team that doesn't want to deal with a given agent. There have been some notorious agents in the past. There was at one point when Sean Merriman came out, he had hired a different agent who helped get him drafted high, the late Gary Wishard, and then fired Wishard after the draft and hired a different firm that if he had had that firm from the get-go, he wouldn't have been drafted as high as he was because his agents that he was represented by, I don't think they're in the business anymore, but they were a group that the teams were always leery about. So you've got the Texans, who had a very bad relationship with Deshaun Watson and his agent David Mulugeta of Athletes First, and could that cause them to say, we don't want to have to deal with this again? Now, we'd have to know what's going on behind the scenes to try to mend fences, but it was ugly. Now, at the end of the day, it was a win-win. Look at what the Texans got for Deshaun Watson. They were able to move on, and Watson was able to move on. There's reason for the two sides to find, you know, some common ground in the fact that they both did come out of this with a victory, but it was an ugly, nasty process, and who knows what was said between executives and agent back when Watson made it clear he wants out. And there were some strong feelings. Remember, he had some candidates for the head coaching position that he submitted to the team when he was under the impression he was going to be involved, and they ignored them. Robert Saleh and Eric Bieniemy, ignored by the Texans, not even interviewed by the Texans, and those were two names that Watson had supplied through his agent. So it's quite possible there's hard feelings there that still linger that would have to be, at a minimum, processed before you get to the point where you're ready to have another relationship like that with the most important player on your team.
Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. We just mentioned Deshaun Watson's name in relation to the Texans back in the day and how that might be helping them form an idea of who they refused to take in the draft because of C.J. Stroud sharing an agent with them. So that kind of leads us to the next topic, which is Jalen Hurts' contract not having every penny guaranteed a la Watson's, leaving the Haslams, the owners of the Browns, and the Browns still on that island, contractual island by themselves. The Eagles give Jalen Hurts a generationally enriching contract that, in certain ways, to parse it, best contract that's ever been given to a quarterback. What is your 2 cents, figuratively, on that contract and its ripple effect in the NFL, Mike?
Well, it's impossible to make a full assessment of the contract until the full details are made available. And I'll get them at some point. I'm already working it through multiple different angles. I'll get them. I'll break it down. What's the signing bonus? What's the full guarantee at signing? The rolling guarantees, when do they vest? It gives you an idea of how much money he's actually going to make and when the window would open for the Eagles to say, okay, this is a mistake. We need to move on. For example, if the Broncos would have loved to have moved on from Russell Wilson, can't do it after 1 year given the structure of the deal. So there's a certain amount beyond what he's earned in the first year of the contract that he's going to continue to make. So with Hurts, what are those guarantees? Now, Adam Schefter had cap numbers last night, and somebody I know who's very versed in negotiating and evaluating contracts reverse engineered the cap numbers and said it looks like $64 million over the first 2 years, $105 million over the first 3 years. It may not compare as favorably to some of the other deals that have been done. There may even be a question as to whether it compares favorably to the Daniel Jones contract. But we'll see what the full details are. And again, what's that full guarantee at signing? How much becomes fully guaranteed next year when they're not going to cut him after one season? And what does that structure look like? When does the window open for the Eagles to make a change if they decide to make a change? When does it go non-guaranteed? And you know, we had all this talk about Lamar Jackson wanting a fully guaranteed contract. There was no discussion of Jalen Hurts wanting one. And how do you get one unless you're in a situation like Deshaun Watson where you have engineered this auction where four teams are vying, competing for your contract in a trade with the Texans? And you tell the Browns, see you later at the perfect time, when they've pissed off Baker Mayfield and they get desperate. Like, those are things you just can't engineer, you can't anticipate. And Jalen Hurts and Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson aren't in a situation like that. They're negotiating with their current teams. So you can't generate the same leverage that Watson used to get a fully guaranteed contract. That's one of the big reasons why these guys aren't going to get one.
Huh. Okay. So what do you think is the ripple effect, if there is one? Because it seems like the contract that Hurts got will be used as a template for everyone else. He went first. So what do you think about that and how it does relate to Lamar Jackson, which is the biggest question mark, I would say.
Well, with every one of these contracts, if it's good for the player, the next player wants to use it as a template. If it's good for the next team wants to use it as a template, and it all comes down to how the negotiations go between player and team. I could see it dragging down Justin Herbert more than it drags down Joe Burrow, because I could see Joe Burrow saying, I don't care what Jalen Hurts got. I want what I want. And Bengals, if you want to keep me over the long haul, you better give me what I want or you're going to have a problem. I mean, they have made it so clear they're going to do whatever they have to take to keep this guy around as long as possible. They're basically giving him a blank check. Now, will he want a fully guaranteed deal? I don't know that he needs a fully guaranteed deal, and that's another part of this contract negotiation process that I don't think is widely understood. If there's one term or one structure that you really want, you got to give up somewhere else. So if you want full guarantees, what are you giving up on the other side? If you want a high average per year, like Jalen Hurts got, what are you giving up elsewhere? What do you get? What do you give up? And so, yeah, once we see the final numbers, if it's good for the Eagles, other teams will try to use it. If it's good for the player, other players will try to use it. And the bottom line is the cap keeps going up, the market keeps going up, the contracts keep going up, and each one of these contracts gets negotiated individually based upon how far the player wants to push it and what his options are if he decides to say to the team, I'm just not accepting what you put on the table.
Before I let you go, Mike Florio, 9 days before the first round of the 2023 draft, what are you hearing about the top 10 and how it might formulate, best you can tell? Anything new?
Well, the betting markets, I think, are fascinating. They've become a great tool for predicting what's going to happen with the draft. Now, they get some things wrong, but when it relates to the top of the draft, they're pretty accurate. So when you've got Bryce Young, the runaway favorite, he's number one. Number two, you've got guys like Will Anderson and Tyree Wilson, who are catching the quarterbacks. You've got Will Levis ahead of C.J. Stroud to be the second overall pick. I mean, you just track it one by one. You look at who the favorites are for where guys are going to land. Jalen Carter, all the talk about him falling out of the top 10. He may not fall out of the top 5.
Really?
The betting markets are pointing to Seattle. So I just think those betting markets are going to be critical to giving us the insight as we get closer and closer to the draft as to how that top 5, top 10 is going to fall. And that's an interesting exercise year to year. Looking at what the betting markets are just before the draft begins and how the draft plays out, they tell us not to tip the picks. They don't want us to tip the picks. The betting market may end up tipping the picks on behalf of all the networks who are asked very politely by 345 Park Avenue not to tip the picks.
I don't want – I just so you're aware, and I think I've told you this here and also, you know, personally without a microphone on us, I don't want to know. I mean, look, the NFL draft could easily be done like somebody's fantasy league. You know what I mean? We could do it in an encrypted website where everybody takes 5 minutes for a pick and we're done by the end of the night. And nobody knows. We'll just like, you'll just learn it maybe as it's happening or at the end of the night it gets sent out, you know, by a press release. That's the way it could be done. This is a show and I'm a host of a show and I don't want to know. I want to be surprised just like everyone else. And I'm assuming everyone's figuring it out the same way.
I agree with you 100%. Rich, look, every year I get the call from someone at NBC mm-hmm. reminding me that the league office does not want the picks to be tipped. And every right. year mm-hmm. the angel pops up on my right shoulder and the devil pops up on my left shoulder and they have an arm wrestling match. And every year the angel wins because the audience doesn't want it. This isn't a normal journalistic exercise. I've been backstage at the draft.
Yeah.
When it was at Radio City, I would go up there and we'd have a room in the back and we'd interview guys. And when you're backstage, you're privy to the fact that they've got 4 picks in. They're just spreading it out to enhance the show. It's not hard. You don't need many contacts to know who the next pick is going to be. This is not Pulitzer Prize material if you find out who it is. It's a parlor trick. It's not hard to find it out. The audience doesn't want it. I agree with you completely. They want to watch the commissioner walk to the podium
yes.
and utter the name, and they don't want to know it before.
Yeah, they want him to be the Paul Revere. Who's coming? You know, one if by air, two if by ground. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is the way I think fans want it, but maybe one day it'll switch and then.
No. I think that's what it is. You hit the nail on the head. This doesn't have to be a show. It is a show about nothing. Think about what the draft is. What is the useful value of taking this thing to Kansas City
yes.
or anywhere
right.
when you could do it
in 2 seconds?
You could do it through a group text.
Right.
It doesn't have to be what it is, but people love it. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
And the ultimate thing, especially the first night, is having the commissioner walk out, get booed, and then announce the pick.
In that order is what you're saying, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it really is something that, to me, I love hosting it, and I love doing it that way, and I hope fans still want to have it delivered in that manner. But so you think Jalen Carter has a short night when it's all said and done in nine nights from now?
I think 5 is his realistic ceiling, and I think the momentum is growing to the point that, who knows, maybe somebody tries to cut the line in front of the Seahawks if people think the Seahawks are going to take him at 5. And if not the Seahawks at 5, how about the Lions at 6? And if not the Lions at 6, how about the Steelers trading up with the Bears at 9? And you think of those coaches, Pete Carroll, Dan Campbell, and Mike Tomlin, respectively.
Yep.
That's exactly what Jalen Carter needs. He needs somebody who's going to push his buttons and get the most out of him. Because when he's focused and motivated and determined, he's generational. The question is, can they get the most out of him? And it comes down to the coaching that you're going to get. That's the one thing that gets overlooked when we talk about the draft. Where does the kid land? And what kind of help is he going to have? What kind of coaching is he going to have? How motivated is he going to be? And those 3 coaches, I think, would be in a position to get the absolute most out of Jalen Carter.
Mike, thanks for the time. Will you be in Kansas City? Do I see you there?
No, I haven't been to the draft since they left Radio City, so that's been a long time ago. 2014 is the last year I was there.
All right, so hopefully you choose NFL Network, because
I will.
Thank you. That sounded like I twisted your arm.
Wow.
Come on. Did I lose him?
I don't even know who hosts it on ESPN.
Attaboy. So I'm then.
Ever since Berman, who used to be the master
yep.
of subtly tipping the pick,
I know.
The commissioner right. was walking to the podium. once he stopped, then, you know, that's that.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, now, since you've definitely said you're watching NFL Network, I will also definitely say, everybody get Father of Mine, where all ebooks are sold.
Thank you very much.
You can go.
I can do a good quid pro quo. $4.99 wherever you get your ebooks. Debuting next Tuesday.
Ladies and gentlemen,
order it now.
Mike, thanks for the time. Be well. We'll
thanks,
chat soon.
Good talking to you, pal.
Right back at you. That's Mike Florio, everybody. At Pro Football Talk, a must follow. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back to unwrap a lot of what Mike just said. As always, great food for thought from Mike.
This episode is brought to you by YouTube, now the new home of the NFL Sunday Ticket. YouTube TV is the easiest way to watch your favorite out-of-market NFL teams and gives you the option of watching at home on the big screen, on your phone, or on a laptop as you're recording your podcast. No satellite dish install required. Catch the lowest full season price of YouTube and YouTube TV when you sign up today and get $100 off of NFL Sunday Ticket. Check it out at tv.youtube.com/learn/NFL Sunday Ticket.
April is National Financial Literacy Month. What is financial literacy? It's applying different skills effectively, including managing your finances, budgeting, and saving. It just so happens the Cumulus Podcast Network has three great podcasts to help raise your financial IQ. Stacking Benjamins with Joe Saul-Sehy, Bankrate's 2023 Best Personal Finance Podcast.
What's one of life's biggest expenses that we can maybe talk about reducing?
Housing.
Is housing on the list? Buying a house is the number two expense of all these expenses. What's a way that we can reduce our housing expense?
Move from Seattle to Florida.
Wow, spoken like somebody with a little knowledge of that situation.
Afford anything with financial journalist Paula Pant.
You have many financial goals. You want to buy or pay off your house. You need to replace your car. You want to pay for a wedding, send your kids to college, travel the world, and one day retire. But how?
And Webby Award-winning Brown Ambition with Tiffany the Budgetnista Alice and personal finance expert Mandy Woodruff.
When I was crafting my resume in my career, I wasn't thinking about the job I had. I was always thinking, like, what's going to impress the person who has my next opportunity and make them want to have a conversation with me? And yeah, I think people are not thinking that far ahead.
That's why we'd be leaning into you, career coach.
So, as you look to improve your financial literacy, follow Stacking Benjamins, Afford Anything, and Brown Ambition. Wherever you listen.
I'll tell you how excited I am that Keith Hernandez is in our green room right now.
Probably not as excited as me, but
look at you, man.
Well, you know that I invented the cake quarter.
If you didn't have five fingers, I'd think Mr. Met was sitting right here.
We still haven't figured that out yet, have we? Three.
No. He has four fingers. One is a thumb.
It's an appendage.
And once you bend the thumb back, and if you have just four fingers,
it's an appendage.
Then the middle one still exists. As we've honestly.
It's an appendage.
Absolutely not.
It's an appendage.
I don't get it.
If you have four, there's no middle.
Exactly.
So when I teach my children how many fingers they have.
Four and
four
a thumb.
Fingers?
Four
you have
thumb.
Five fingers.
You have five.
Right, you have five fingers, right.
But if you have four, where's the middle?
But then you bend the thumb back. Bend your thumb back. There's your middle.
No, but now.
Which is what Mr. Met did on that day.
No, I'm team Mr. Met here.
Oh, I mean, who's not? Remember they used to have Mrs. Met?
Yes. Mrs. Met's still
she's
around.
Still around. Is she really?
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I love?
The bullpen car?
The bullpen car. I loved the Met hat. When I would go to games, the Met hat with their bullpen car.
The Yankees used to have a full-on sedan.
Remember let's not all of a sudden start acting like we're Mets fans here just because one of the all-time greats is in there.
Excuse me.
All right, come on.
Hold on a minute. Excuse me. Mr. Altoona.
Yeah.
I'm a native New Yorker.
Well, I mean, you know, Brockman would
give
me
outrage. My first game ever was at Shea Stadium. I watched Mickey friggin' Lolich pitch for the Mets.
You know,
John Milner was in the outfield, and I got to wave at him, and I'll never forget it.
You want to know who the
my
team
first baseball
I saw?
Game ever was at Shea Stadium. I was at, excuse me, hold
Jets,
on a minute.
I'm with you.
I can't believe I've got to defend myself here.
Look, I'm just saying, you guys are Yankees fans. He's a Red Sox fan.
Excuse me, hold on a minute.
I've been to Mets opening day once.
Excuse me, you are the Met fan of the Rich Eisen Show.
That's what I'm saying.
And I created.
But this man created the K-Corner.
I have an article in the New York Times that says I created the K-Corner.
Just again, since Keith is sitting in our green room, potentially frightened to come out here now, you did not create the K-Corner.
No, these other guys did, and I took
and
over
the
for them when they
Times
left.
And then the New York Times wrote about it day, happened to
Mike
show
stole a seat.
Up yes. after those guys left. And you were actually...
We were friends with the guys.
And you were administering the cake. You were in charge of the cake
corner. I took over.
For Dwight Gooden.
And then Gary Carter hit a home run to win the game at the end of the game.
This guy.
Come on.
And the New York Times...
And I saw them Boston lose to them.
So you didn't tell... Hold on a second. You didn't tell the New York Times reporter when they came to ask questions about the cake corner. You just acted like this was your corner.
No, no, no. My friend kind of
steered
this.
You didn't say, like, I don't run it. I'm just here. The guys who run it just left.
There's no way he gave that info
up. There's no way.
There's no way he said, oh, this isn't mine.
This isn't mine. No. I'm just here. I'm just putting the K on a pizza box.
Here's what happened.
I usually spell K backwards anyway.
Here's what happened. One of the guys said, who's doing the K corner? Because we want to talk to the guys that did the K corner.
Doing the K corner.
And by the way, Gooden was already out.
The reporter used that phrase as
Gooden
well.
Gooden was out.
He's doing the K corner.
And then they pointed us out. And we got it. Brockman loves this story. I showed you guys the black and white in the New York Times.
I cannot wait.
It's legit.
Oh, man.
You guys want
to
hear something funny
Keith
about...
Have Keith Hernandez here to hear this story in person.
You guys want to hear something funny about the first time I went to Shea? Guess who the Mets were playing?
The Cardinals?
No, the Pirates.
Okay.
Oh.
So I left Pittsburgh to go to New York, and just so happened that they were playing the Pirates, who I watched every day anyway.
I thought your story was it was Keith Hernandez as a Cardinal before he became a
Met. No, it was just like, what's the chances of that? Like, I had to go to New York to watch a team that
was... Did you drive all the way from PA to go?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty...
And it wasn't like... Didn't mean to go to the game. I was in New York.
I imagine this was
and got tickets and was like, "Who are they playing? The Pirates."
Well, was this the Jim Leland, Barry Bonds?
No, this is.
Oh, this is the this is
mid-90s.
Oh, this is
so
the
I
bleacher seats in Shea were amazing. That was the big apple coming out. That was like the '80s. Was just Brock
covering the World Series, the 2000 World Series for ESPN underneath Shea Stadium's. Bleacher underneath, I guess, in the tunnel that leads out to home plate, and just looking up and around and seeing just like cobwebs there since Ed Cranepool was playing. know, seriously, like there might have been like a Doug Flynn hot dog wrapper stuck somewhere, and I just thought to myself, my God, this place is old. This is an old spot, man.
Kiner's Corner.
Well, I mean,
we
speaking of Kiner's Corner, Keith. And Ron Darling, who's one of our favorites here. I don't think we've ever had Gary Cohen on, who's phenomenal.
He's amazing.
The three of them have been calling Met games together. This is their 18th season together, surpassing, wait for it, Mets fans, Ralph Kiner, Lindsey Nelson, and Bob Murphy.
Oh,
Bob
Murphy. That's my childhood right there.
Fasten your seatbelts, everybody.
Cons Franks. I remember, oh my God.
Cons Franks.
So I'm sure Keith was a guest in Kiner's Corner.
Had to be.
Oh, 100%.
Had to be.
Was he there on Mother's Day when Ralph wished all mothers out there happy birthday?
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Mother's Day, so all you mothers out there, happy birthday.
I'm sure it was mother's birthday that day.
Yeah, true.
Got one.
I am sure Mother's Day did, in fact, land on somebody's birthday. Who was a mother?
And a mother.
Conspiracy theories. Paranormal. UFOs.
In the 1960s, the United States and the Soviet Union started developing directed energy microwave devices. And even to this day, the United States government is still continuing its research into high-power microwaves. It is nothing compared to what China is doing.
Theories of the Third Kind on YouTube or wherever you listen.